Miriam writes, dear George, if I was ever superstitious about Friday the 13th, it definitely was back in 1950. My husband of 4.5 years died suddenly at the age of 31 on that date. 13 days later, our son was 3 years old. 3 months later, I gave birth to our daughter. I was put in room 313 at the hospital. I made them change my room. I felt I was hexed. When I traveled by train later that year, the compartment was 13. 13 certainly was an unlucky number for me. Our two children passed away young, too, both on June 11th, but different years. Strange things really do happen, but strange and sad combined can be very hard to handle. Man, that is something else. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment with Open Lines on Friday into Saturday morning on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you might be enjoying the beginning of your three-day weekend, so please do so. We will be live for you on President's Day that we celebrate on Monday, Feb 16. So we'll have a live program for you. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Jerry in Chula Vista, California, on the wild card line. Jerry, go ahead.
Well, hello, George. Hey. I'm not a superstitious guy, but I really take note when there's the 13th of the month, particularly Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah, me too.
It was 10 years ago, February 13th, that I lost my mom. Not suddenly, but from cancer. And then it was in 1984, on Friday the 13th, I lost my wife to cancer. And then it was back in 79, I think, I was working up in the high mountains out of Lander, Wyoming, and so it was hard to get home from there. I hadn't been home for a couple of months, so I decided to make a bonsai run on that weekend down here and back, and just touch base. It's the best I could do.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sunny day, dry roads. I got a early leave from the job so I could catch a plane, one of two planes to get home. I was driving down this mountain road, and I rounded a corner, and suddenly I could see nothing. There was snow blowing down over the road like a blizzard. And so, as anyone would do, I hit my brakes so that, I wouldn't, the impact would be less if I, I didn't want to hit somebody coming up the other way. And, of course, the roadway was wet. I went off the mountain and was very fortunate because I landed in a deep snowdrift quite a ways down the mountain.
How far was the fall?
Oh, it was, I don't know, maybe 20 feet.
Okay.
But just ahead of me were some big trees that might have been a problem.
Yeah.
And so, actually, I got home. I checked for damage on me, and couldn't find any, except I was in shock. I managed to get the door open. I climbed back up to the road, hitchhiked to the airport, and caught my plane.
My God!
Now, I'm not going to say I wasn't thinking about my car that weekend, but I had made a phone call for somebody to go try to get it out of there. But anyway, that was a memorable day, and I
I would think so.
And I think I was very fortunate there.
How'd they get your car? You got to tell me that story.
How big?
How'd they get it out?
Oh, how'd they get it out? Oh, yeah, that was the interesting part. It wasn't damaged, but until like
20
until
feet
I got
it. It wasn't damaged, but what happened?
But they had to block off this, this narrow road to get the tow truck and a line down there, and they got it almost to the top, and the cable broke.
Oh, down it goes again.
And then, so in the process of making sure they got it up the next time, they kind of did a number on the chrome bumper.
They just kept pulling it, right?
Yeah, and they got it. And, so the insurance pretty much paid for it. So,
man, you're lucky.
I'm lucky. And so I, as I say, when 13th comes up, I just pay attention and try to.
How many of those lives you think you've used, Jerry?
Yeah, a number.
I keep seeing.
Although I've had all kinds.
Remember 9 lives of El Fago Baca?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, 9 lives like a cat. I wonder how many you've used.
Well, I've had some other. I'm a good driver in good weather. You know, I'm a native of Southern California.
Question is, you got to be a good driver in bad weather.
But in Southern California, nobody knows how to drive, and when I get up in inclement weather, I've had some very exciting e-ride crashes, and nobody's been hurt.
Well, I'm glad you're here, Jerry. Shane in Ozarks in Missouri. Welcome back to the Ozarks, Shane. How are you?
I'm doing great, George, and it's a pleasure to speak with you again. At least I think I'm speaking with you again. Weren't you hosting the night that Dean Koontz was on?
No, that was not me.
Okay.
But that's okay.
Well, then it's a pleasure to speak with you for the first time, sir.
Likewise.
I love Friday the 13th. First, I'm sitting here writing a screenplay for a Friday the 13th movie, which will probably never be made, but it's still fun to do.
Hey, give it your best shot. You never know.
I'm trying. There is so many people out there that on Friday the 13th are so worried about bad luck and bad things happening that they are unaware that they draw all this negative energy into themselves, and it just leaves this overabundance of positive energy out there just looking for a place to go. And so I just make myself as a positive energy magnet, and good things always happen.
You're an antenna for that, huh?
I try to be. Like today, in my job, I found one of these new John Quincy Adams dollar coins. I found out that a lottery ticket that I purchased earlier in the week won a free lottery ticket.
Hey.
And whereas I thought I was going to be alone on Valentine's Day, I got into contact with an old girlfriend who invited me up to come spend Valentine's Day with her.
How about that?
Just a wonderful, beautiful day, Friday the 13th, and I look forward to next month and the third one in the year.
So when there are clouds outside, some clouds, is it partly cloudy or partly sunny to you?
Oh, it's always partly sunny.
Good for you. That's the way to look at it.
So that's a little hint, a little tip for people out there. If they want to have a good Friday the 13th, just remember, be positive, and it's out there for them.
It's all about karma, isn't it?
I hope so.
Okay. Hey, good luck on your script. West of the Rockies, let's go to Pahrump, Nevada. Al, it's your turn. Hey, Al, how are you doing?
Yeah, this is Al. Pahrump, Nevada?
Yes, sir.
Home of Art Bell.
He's right around the corner from you, no doubt.
Okay. My thing was this. I joined the Air Force on Friday the 13th, 1965.
Well, one, thanks for serving. Two, why'd you join on that day?
It just happened.
Okay.
It was supposed to be the weekend, but they shot it up a day. And forget about all the in-betweens, but I got out on December 13th, 1968. And 13s have been following me all my life.
And I trust it's been okay.
It's been terrific. I love 13s. Matter of fact, I've been listening to Coast for 13 years. And this is the first time, I don't know why I decided to call, but I called.
On the 13th.
On the 13th.
Now,
I even used to deliver mail to Art Bell, matter of fact, but I won't tell you when or where.
No, you can't. Don't do that.
No. But anyway, what I really wanted to discuss, besides the 13s, is when I left Cameron Bay in Vietnam, it was May 21st, 1968. I flew on Jet Airlines, starting with Pan Am, from Cameron to Tokyo, Japan, and I saw a beautiful Mount Fuji just sticking up above the clouds.
Oh, yeah.
Before we landed.
What a sight.
Went to Anchorage, Alaska. From Anchorage, Alaska, we flew to SeaTac Airport.
Mm-hmm.
Then to Chicago, then to JFK. 23 hours of flying on Jet Airlines. And at JFK, they put us on a Mohawk Airlines, 20 maybe 30-seater, like this plane that just went down in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to say it, but I had to bring this up because they made us wear parachutes. It was a prop plane, and it had struts. Now remember this. After 23 hours on Jet Airlines, my last hour to get home to Hartford, Connecticut, I'm on a plane, props, struts, parachute. It blew me away.
Absolutely.
It just literally blew me away. But that's the way it goes. And but 13s have been following me all my life. When I first came out to Vegas, my first apartment was 2128 Ellis, which is 13. Apartment number 13. The numbers on my license plate from Connecticut totaled 13.
You don't run away from 13.
No, I don't. And it's my luckiest number.
I think, and see, and that's just like Shane, Al. If you make it evil, if you make it something that you're afraid of, it's going to happen. All right, good for you, Al. Thanks, Al. Let's go to a couple more calls before the break here. Let's go to Tampa, Florida. John, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for letting me get on. Sure thing. I wanted to talk about the Knights Templar because it was Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
I thought I maybe could correct a little bit of history on the Knights Templar. They were an organization to protect the bloodline of the royal bloodline of David of Israel. They started by St. Bernard, and apparently he was a member of that bloodline. And it went up through Switzerland, and as we all know, the Knights Templar started banking. And the word Switzerland comes from the word Suez, and that comes from Jewish, which is another name for saying Jewish. So Switzerland, the name Switzerland, means Jewish land. And the Knights Templar were protecting a family in Switzerland, a royal family, and they were later dethroned by an emperor named Sigismund. And that family was called von Sachs, and they were of the stone, and that stone was of the stone of destiny. And the 12 tribes of Israel were all united in Switzerland by a man named St. Gallen, and he brought that line up through Switzerland.
Do you think that... I'm sorry, are the Templars still around, do you think?
Yeah, the Templars aren't around, but the actual bloodline of that they were protecting are around. And the last effort of the Templars was in 1499, where the great-grandsons of the Templars came together to fight off Sigismund, the Austrian army, and the Swabian Knights, where Switzerland won its independence by a man named Ulrich von Sachs, the great king priest of the line of David. He fought off the Austrians, and he brought independence to Switzerland and democracy to the rest of the modern world.
Now, the bloodline, are they still in banking, maybe?
The bloodline isn't in banking because, as Ulrich von Sachs brought democracy to Switzerland, Sigismund was upset with him, and he put a price on Ulrich von Sachs's head. And the bloodline had to go into hiding.
I see. And they're probably still in hiding now somewhere. Joe in Birmingham, Alabama, you're our first-time caller. Hi, Joe.
Hey, George. I'm like one of your previous callers. I've been listening to the show for 13 years.
Well, thanks for your support from,
yes, sir,
from all of us.
I'm sure you remember when the space shuttle, the Challenger, blew up.
Oh, yeah. As I was in my office back in St. Louis when that happened in the 80s.
Yes, sir. Well, I dreamed about it happening the night before it happened. I was living with my folks at the time, and I was sitting on the side of the bed with my mother shaking me, waking me up, and she said, "What are you screaming about a space shuttle blowing up for?" And they were fixing to launch it the next day.
Oh, my God.
Yes, sir. And I've been wanting to call in about this all these years, but I finally just now made myself do it. But
have you had these kind of dreams before, Joe?
No, sir. That's the only time this has ever happened.
That was it. And then when the Columbia went down, nothing there.
No, sir. But the night before the Challenger blew up, I dreamed about it, and my mother woke me up. I was sitting on the side of the bed. She had turned the light on in my room and was shaking me, and she said, "You're screaming about a space shuttle blowing up."
When it happened, what did you think?
It just knocked me for a loop.
Was it, and I'm sure you've seen the video by now.
Yes, sir.
Was it like your dream?
Yes, sir, exactly.
Man. You were somehow tuned into something.
Yes, sir, I was.
And it's there. Joe, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I mean, I've always been a believer in intuitive dreams, always. And you, Joe, continue to prove it to us that it's real and it exists. Let's go next to Pueblo, Colorado. Isaac.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to you for years, and you've been there when I needed you most, the Coast to Coast AM team.
Super.
And I appreciate it. This story, it takes place actually when I was a child, and then I found out about it later through listening to your broadcast, what I saw, and it's about a chupacabra.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I had a story about maybe a chupacabra in Arizona today. Go ahead.
Oh, Arizona. Okay. Well, I was young. I'd say I had to be about maybe 12 or 13. My friend and myself, you know, when you're young, you take your BB guns and your water canteens, and we had the day off of school. It was a nice day. And I live out in the Colorado Mountains, and we were just walking through this prairie, and we had nothing to do that day. School was out. So we went a little extra far, and we crossed some barbed wire, past cow pastures, and we got really far, far out in the prairie, further than we ever been. And we rounded this bend, and I jumped around the corner, and I saw this little creature, and he looked at me for a second. He had to be about maybe 4 foot tall, and he had little eyes and short arms. And my friend jumped around, and all of a sudden, the thing jumped into this ball and flew forward really fast, jumped ahead, and then shot into the ground, and dust flew into the air so high, and the ground was covered. It, like, it buried itself into a hole. Me and my friend looked at each other, and we shrugged each shoulder. Like, yeah. What was that? So we walked up to the hole, and the hole was gone. Like, there was nothing there. You could see the dirt, like, it covered itself up. And I was like, and he didn't want to mess with the hole, neither did I. We just shrugged each other's shoulders and kept walking. And years later, my mom said, you got to listen to the show Coast to Coast because you like UFOs and everything. One night, I'm listening. You had this guest on who said, well, I was talking about chupacabras. And they say, it rolls into the ball like Sonic the Hedgehog. And I sat up and I was like, I saw that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I saw. So I called my friend like at 1 a.m. And the answer is all tired, and I was like, the chimichingas, we saw the chimichingas. And he's like, are you been drinking? Are you drunk? I was like, no, we saw a chimichinga. Remember when we were kids? He thought I was drinking because it was like 1 a.m.
Chimichinga.
Yeah, well, I couldn't say it. Now I know because I did some research. But, you know, an excitement when you call somebody.
Oh, yeah. And Isaac, it must have been a weird-looking creature.
And I swear to people, that the people who don't believe it, you know, I really don't care because what I saw is what I saw. I know what prairie dogs look like in Colorado. We don't have a lot of creatures that look like what I saw.
Well, what they had in Arizona that they just told me about, a winged creature that looked like a kangaroo. Now, that's strange, too. Hey, I'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, now, over the weekend, we've got Ian Punnett for you on Saturday, George Knapp hosting on Sunday. Then I'll be back Monday. And on President's Day, yes, we will have that live program. Alex Jones joins us with some various state representatives. We talk about some of these states that want to preserve gun ownership and also sovereignty. They're not too happy with some of the things the federal government is doing. Should be an incredible program. You know, fitting on President's Day, of course, for that political-type show with an incredible coast-to-coast twist. Tuesday, Robert Hastings joins us. UFOs and nukes, what a show that will be. And then Stan and Holly Deo join us as we talk about earth changes and what we can do to prepare. That'll be Wednesday, Thursday, 11-11, a program on that number. A lot of us see it all the time. And then on Friday, taking a night off, and the master, Art Bell, joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Alien implant removal surgery. No one does it better than Dr. Roger Lear. And I had a chance to attend one of those surgeries. Incredible. Every time they tried to remove it, it moved around. And before the surgery, I interviewed the patient we call Brenda. Here now, Dr. Roger Lear, my interview with his patient. Quite a day today, Dr. Lear, wasn't it?
Boy, you better You better say that about three or four times, because it was a whopper.
Roger, I got to tell you, this was very, very fascinating for me. You know, for so many years now, you and I have chatted. I've seen videos. We've seen the pictures, read the books on what you've done. But to actually get invited and to witness an operation, and I'm going to have you talk a little bit about that operation, was just for me one of the highlights of this broadcast career, because this also was not a simple operation. And I want everyone to know what you will hear this half hour will be an interview I conducted several hours ago with a 44-year-old woman from the Midwest called Brenda, who had this implant in her. Roger, this was a difficult operation. They're not always this difficult, are they?
Not always. Many times we've been what you could call lucky. It takes me back, however, to the first set of surgeries we did in 1995 without all the fancy equipment that you saw today, George. And it took us literally an hour and a half. There was two that were in the big toe, but it took us about an hour and a half to do each side. That's 3 hours for one toe. And then we went ahead to do the next case, which was an object located in the back of the hand, and that was another hour and a half. So that's without, you know, all this fancy equipment that you were fortunate enough mm-hmm. to take a look at.
And I don't think you and the doctors involved in the surgery today could have taken this object out without that kind of equipment today.
I agree. Again, you'd have to be very, very lucky and have a lot of eagle eyes looking for, you know, a very small object. It's literally like going on a fishing expedition and the proverbial needle in the haystack.
Because I've got to tell everybody who will be able to see part of this on the Coast to Coast AM website, there's some pictures there, as I mentioned, and pictures 5 and 6 will show you what this implant actually is. But every time you surgeons try to extract this implant, Roger, it moved.
That's right.
I found that to be incredible.
Yeah, we tell people that, and there's some element of disbelief. When Whitley Strieber had his object, you know, they attempted to surgically remove it, and it moved out of the way. The surgeon got so fearful, he just basically closed it up and left it there.
Okay, you got the object now. What have you done with it?
Well, I've placed it in the fluid that has been working for us, keeping these objects quite stable. We've never lost any so far. And it's basically a serum, which has been separated from the whole blood of the patient who is the abductee. And then once it's locked and sealed and signed for in the vial that it's in, and as you saw, George, you can see all the time and effort we go through to have this a complete chain of physical evidence. Nothing is done without signed and witnessed and so on. And then basically we've taken them back and locked them up, and it will undergo the next step probably on Monday.
I did not see any markings, scars on the face of Brenda, which would have shown me how perhaps this object got inside her cheek.
That's correct. None of the cases so far have had any evident portal of entry or defect in the skin where these things come in. Now, although it's not a big, giant piece, I mean, if you got a piece of that that size through your skin, I mean, you're going to...
You're going to know it.
Yeah, you're going to know it, sure. It's not going to just, you know, appear suddenly and make a nest in there. Things don't work that way.
Roger, you have now conducted 11 operations on people extracting implants or objects. Do they all continue to baffle you?
It seems, George, like many other things in the field of ufology, and I'm sure that the folks like Colin Kelleher at the National Institute for Discovery Science will agree with me. When you're hot on the trail of something and you feel, boy, you know, I'm doing this testing and we're going to get the answers, many times what you just wind up with are more questions.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to play an earlier interview that I conducted today before the operation with 44-year-old Brenda. We're not going to give you her last name, obviously. She's from the Midwest. And, well, let's just listen. Let's let you hear her in her own voice.
Brenda, how did you know that there might have been some kind of an implant or an object in your cheek?
Well, about 5 years ago, I went to the dentist, and he, just as a matter of routine x-ray, he made a passing comment saying, well, that's unusual. I wonder what that was. And he just said it in passing. And then as time went on, and I had certain events happen in my life. I was talking with my best friend, Mary, and like I said, as time went on, it seemed that perhaps this was something more than just a fluke or something. So my best friend, she contacted Dr. Lear via email, and that's when it started. So,
did you at any point think, how did this get in my cheek?
Yes. There's no logical reason that anyone could find why that's there. There's no scar on the outside. There's no scarring on the inside. And so.
Any idea how long it's been in you?
I have no idea. The earliest record is like the one about 5 years ago, the routine x-ray. I don't have any x-rays from earlier, so I don't know.
It could have been there since you were a child.
Absolutely. And it's not in my jawbone. It's actually in the flesh part of the cheek on the right.
Over the course of your life, Brenda, have you ever felt that you might have been abducted by aliens or that anything peculiar has happened to you in your life where you might be able to tie in what this might be in your cheek with events that you either recollect or just think something strange happened to me?
Well, I've had, since I was a young adult, I've had lots of nightmares where I would be awakened in the middle of the night from a bad nightmare. And upon awakening, I would see, I don't know how to explain it, certain beings or entities, whatever someone wants to call it, I would see them after being awakened from a nightmare. And I thought that was normal until I talk to other people and they go, no, that isn't normal. So I guess that started it, that's unusual. And there, I had a figure visit me in the middle of the night, and that's what really started me thinking, I wonder what's wrong. Because I'm a very logical, objective person. And I had been awakened by something was choking me. My breathing was constricted, and this was about 2 years ago. And I sat up, and whatever was choking me released its chokehold. So I was kind of getting my bearings and kind of looking around. And I looked up, and with my physical eye, there was a being that was male. It was very muscular. It was about 5 feet off the floor. It had the appearance of being human, mm-hmm. In terms of its body shape. It was about 5 feet off the floor on what I would call an invisible surface, as if it was crouched down, but on a floor about 5 feet off the floor. And he was dressed all in black in what I would call a skin suit. His head was covered. His whole body was covered. And he was crouched there when I looked at him, and he said, we're here now. But he didn't speak. He said it telepathically or whatever you want to call that. And then he turned to the side to show me what I call wings. He had like a four-feathered wing on the side of his head. He turned purposely to show me that for emphasis, and then he dematerialized. The reason I know I saw it with my physical eyes, because when I had sat up from catching my breath, when I first saw him, I looked down at my hands and I pinched my forearms to make sure I was awake just for my own self, and I did physically see him. So that's when we got real when I got real concerned that there's something odd going on here.
You're from the Midwest. Do you ever recollect seeing strange objects, lights, what a lot of people would call UFOs, wherever you lived?
No, I don't. My parents recalled seeing some green glowing balls around their home outside, but that was after I was gone from the home. I was, in my teens and 20s. So, but I personally know. No.
How do you feel about getting this taken out of your cheek?
I'm very glad about it, because if in fact this is a foreign object, if in fact it was put there by an unknown, what did Dr. Lear call it, a non-terrestrial, if in fact that is true, then it was put there without my will and without my consent. And therefore, it is a foreign object, and I consider it a violation to me, and I want it out.
And how do you feel that maybe they've been following you, they've been tracking you with this?
It's very sad to me. It's sad that there are such things out there that would violate a person and a human being like that. It's very sad to me, and it's a little bit scary, but it's more, like I said, like a violation to me.
I'm going to ask you a question that may seem very bizarre to you, but I think it's important under the basis of what may be happening to mm-hmm. you. Have you ever had the feeling that you might have been pregnant before, and then all of a sudden you were not?
I can't remember ever having that. No. I personally don't have any children, but no, I don't remember. Maybe. I struggle horribly with my memory. It feels like it gets erased, and it seems to be getting worse. And I don't think it's because of my age, so...
Well, let's have the operation and see what it is.
Right. Thank you.
Well, Brenda went on to tell me that she said also that the being that was choking her while she was in her room looked like a praying mantis, object praying mantis type entity that so many people have explained, have testified to, that they have seen as well. Roger, in this particular case with Brenda, she seems to be a little upset that she's got an implant, but as far as I'm concerned, she seems like an all-American woman. There's nothing strange about her, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And she is just the perfect scientific candidate to undergo this kind of a procedure. She has absolutely no knowledge whatsoever of anything that has anything to do with the UFO community. She didn't know who George Norrie was. She didn't know who Art Bell was. She never heard of Whitley Strieber. You know, she has absolutely no contact with anybody, and has kept this to herself and very quiet for a number of years. Yet her reactions are, very sound. You can tell this is a woman that certainly has no mental problems whatsoever. And she is very, very, very sincere, and I'm sure you found her that way.
Roger, did the object, prior to removing it, ever show you any kind of electromagnetic field or anything like that?
Yes, it did. We used several different instruments for detection of output from these objects. And we use an instrument called a Gauss meter, which measures electromagnetic field strength in units of milligauss. Hers was putting out between 2 and 3 milligauss, not as high as some of them we've had that are putting out 6 milligauss. And then we used detection devices such as a Pumitive little stud finder. We'll go over the area mm-hmm. and see if anything happens. We used that. We used a small, very sensitive compass, and it would deflect the needle away from magnetic core north at about 3 to 4 degrees. And then this time we were able to obtain a really good and very sensitive radio frequency detector. And this was our first experience with this because we found that, that something was emanating at, I believe, 92.7 megahertz.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would lock on and stay there for a while, and suddenly it would pop up to 102, I think, 102.9, if I remember correctly.
Roger, very quickly, if this were merely just a wire, just a plain old wire, would it still throw off any kind of electromagnetic field?
Absolutely not.
I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over. I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Coast to Coast.